Hello, this is Paul Kangas on radio station KPOO. Today with me is Jim Kearns and Richard Mayers of the Community Education Center. Did I say that wrong?
Myers.
Okay. Thank you.
Richard Myers.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Yeah, and Jim Kearns.
They attracted my attention because they wrote some material on how the assassination of John Kennedy created a vacuum in the United States and brought the British rock music into the United States. And with that introduction, I'd like to ask a few questions of Richard and Jim about where they got the idea from and just the feeling that came from.
Well, I think originally we had set out to teach a class on 55 through 68 and kind of the evolution of music in the United States. And I think what we found was there was a year that really changed a lot of things, and that was the end of 1963 and 1964. And in investigating it, of course, the Kennedy assassination came up as a major mood changer in the United States, something that really impacted the mass culture, impacted the youth of society on a very deep level, and a level that, you know, you can look at the charts, we can talk about this a little later, but you can look at the charts and really see an impact just from popular music charts. And across the culture, it was evident. But that's kind of how it came about, kind of in investigating each year of that 13-year period. That year, I think, really stood out.
Yeah, what people in this era may not recognize is the impact Kennedy had on the younger people in the country at that time, where he was a real idealistic man and a sort of a visionary, and he represented a dream to the young people. And when he was taken away, all these young people were left without a leader, and there was, like you said, a vacuum amongst the culture, and this group of young people were mobilized, they were energetic, they were enthusiastic, and all of a sudden the leader of their group was assassinated on television. They were in a state where they were looking for something new to latch on to. And when the Beatles came over from England, it was a natural thing for them to attach themselves to, because here's something from another country. They're foreigners. They have nothing to do with the United States. And they write a good song, and they're cute, and they're witty, and all that, but there's something different. So people who were fed up with the United States and felt like we had assassinated our own leader suddenly had something they could attach themselves to and put their energies behind.
Yeah, I think, you know, something that we have to stress about Kennedy was he played out the image of the American mythic figure so well. He played out the cowboy image as well as the Brando and Dean and Elvis images of the 50s. He was beautiful. He was charismatic. He was forging a new frontier. He even says it in the 60s speech. And this kind of hero really kind of attacked the kind of archaic needs of the country. It was, it was much more than just a politician. This was a man that, despite what his politics were, it was a man that represented something that was so American in so many ways. And for that reason, I think, like Richard said, the day he was shot and on television in front of millions of people was a day that this country will never forget, because it saw its hero die.
There was a similar day in history. I don't know if the parallel fits, but once upon a time there was a story about a guy named Christ being executed, and that changed the calendar. There were people that were so upset by that they established their own calendar.
Yeah, and also the one thing about Kennedy also is that it was so much image-based that if you go and look at his actual politics, they may not have differed that much from other people of the era, but he was able to work with the media in a different way and charm them, and he had this appeal, and his wife was a young, beautiful woman, and that together they had so much appeal cosmetically and image-wise that's where the connection with mass culture and the pop music comes in, because it's more than just a political thing. It touched on all these other aspects of life as well.
Yeah, what your point about Jesus was killed. He wasn't shot, but he was crucified, and I think it's a good analogy, actually, because you know, you had in 63 you had a youth that was, let's say you had been born in 1946, let's say, okay, and you had, when you were 9 years old, you heard Elvis Presley for the first time, okay. By the time you were 13, well, Elvis was in the army, Buddy Holly was dead, Eddie Cochran was dead, Little Richard was in Australia, Jerry Lee Lewis had married a 14-year-old. Okay, your heroes had disintegrated in front of your eyes. Okay, here comes John Kennedy, and like I'm trying to point out, there is a mythic character to Kennedy, as there was to a lot of these young rock and roll heroes. And Kennedy was kind of, you know, in some ways filled a vacuum where these rockers had left them, you know, because in the popular music scene you had Frankie Avalon, you had Dion, and you had these crooners really not saying much at all and not that charismatic. Kennedy comes along and he shows the country this virile, this heterosexual, this strong image of a male, and for the youth of the country it was very, very you know, it really drew him in. So when you see that person shot, your illusions, your dreams get shattered with that. And I think that was the turning point, and why, like Richard said, why the Beatles were able to come in like they did from England, why the Stones could sing a song like Satisfaction and relate to people in this country, or Get Off My Cloud, you know, songs that really showed some angst, songs that came from another place, not from this culture.
Many people always ask the question, where were you when John Kennedy was killed? Like Richard Nixon was asked, where were you when John Kennedy was killed? He said, oh, I was on the streets of New York City in a taxi cab. But investigators found that indeed he was at the Baker Hotel, 4 blocks from the scene of the assassination, at a so-called Pepsi-Cola meeting. And it turned out it was a coordinating planning meeting for the Kennedy assassination. He had been at a party the night before with Lyndon Johnson, J. Edgar Hoover, Prescott Bush, the father of George Bush, and Clint Murchison, and a bunch of folks like that there in Dallas. And funny, Nixon couldn't remember where he was. So let me ask, Richard, where were you?
Well, as it happens, I was in the womb at the time. I was born in June of 1964, so I had been conceived, but I was not yet born.
So you weren't in Dallas?
No, I was not in Dallas with Nixon.
I may have been in Dallas, but no, I was in the womb as well. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're so interested in this, because we were talking about this the other day. We can't imagine a phenomenon like this happening now, you know, a president being shot and the public reaction, because everybody knows where they were that day, you know. I can't imagine an event like that happening right now or in our lifetimes, you know. Even Watergate didn't compare.
Not just the event itself, but having a person with the impact of a John Kennedy. I can't think of the last time there was a person who had such a strong impact on the country and who had such a grasp on the nation as a whole. And it's difficult for us at this point in time to relate back to that, as hard as we try. It was definitely a different era.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I lived through that era. In fact, I was a guard for Kennedy. And when I was living through it, I mean, even though I used to stand next to Kennedy and I spoke with him, it was no big thing. It was just, he was the president, you know, and he was doing some nice things, but he was getting terrible, terrible, terrible press. He got attacked every day by every major newspaper for withdrawing from Cuba, for stopping the Bay of Pigs, for closing our military bases in Turkey and withdrawing the missiles from there, for making peace deals with the Russians, for arresting the president of U.S. Steel and putting him in jail for violating price controls. So Kennedy was under a terrible media cloud at the time. And it got worse the closer to the assassination. In fact, the month before his assassination, there was an article in the New York Times speculating whether it would be the CIA or the Pentagon who kills the president. Yeah. And so, I mean, to me, he wasn't that, yes, he was that great of a hero in a lot of ways, because when he started going into Cuba, thousands of people marched against the invasion of Cuba all over Europe. There was demonstrations all over Europe during the Bay of Pigs stuff against the U.S. But then when he withdrew and started making peace moves, then he actually became a hero worldwide and was widely respected. Although I personally didn't feel it because I was just, you know, 19 years old and I was in the military. So back then, I don't know, I didn't have a hero worship of him. He was just the president.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we, you know, like we were saying, we really don't know a hero right now. You know, we don't have a hero worship here at all. I mean, we have anti-heroes all over the place, you know. And from, you know, what we've researched, people we've talked to, we have found out, you know, that there was just this cloud. It really didn't matter that much what the politics were. It was much more about the image of the person leading the country, you know. And so I think that's where the hero came from. Is, you know, I think heroes are people you don't really question that much, and they're bound to fall as well.
Yeah, I think he did, like you said earlier, create a great image with his youth, his wife, who was very sophisticated and debonair, and was able to speak in different languages, and was much more of an outgoing type person than, say, the previous Eisenhower administration had been. And plus, we just come out of the 50s. I lived through the 50s. Terrible, terrible repression in this country. My parents were victims of the McCarthy era. And so the Kennedy thing, well, it turns out, actually, the Kennedy thing amounted to a total paradigm shift, a quantum level shift in society. All presidents previous to Kennedy had been from the U.S. Army. After Kennedy, all presidents had been in the Navy, which indicated some sort of ruling class shift. Mm-hmm. Clinton is the first president in the history of the United States that's not been in the military, which indicates some sort of, is this the dawning of the age of Aquarius?
That's very possible. I'm not sure that Clinton is a new John Kennedy. And once again, we're going basically, Jim and I, that for that matter, I mean, that is, are going based on what we've read. And it's interesting to talk to older people who actually were able to experience Kennedy firsthand. And it's interesting to see that the image he was left behind. And as I was saying earlier, it wasn't so much his politics that made the difference. Because as you were saying, so many of the things that he had done were very controversial and he had been criticized for them. But it was Kennedy the man, Kennedy the idol that we could all look up to, that was really the symbol that was assassinated. You find that the politics of Johnson were not that much different than Kennedy's politics, but it was the man himself, it was a different image that we're dealing with. And that's where, once again, the pop culture comes in, because the kids, the young people who had attached themselves to Kennedy needed something, some outlet for their energies and for their thoughts. And that's, and when the British band started coming over to the United States, they were able to generate a lot of support and channel their energy in that direction. And that's where our class is going, and how the class we're teaching it is, in how the music changed at that time and what the impact of the assassination of Kennedy had on the pop music and where it went after his assassination.
What was the most significant change that you noticed in the music? Was it just the influx of British bands, or was it the attitude that came out in music? Was it nihilism? Was it anarchism? Was it sadness, happiness? What kind of feelings came out of the music during that year?
Well, it's interesting. The day that Kennedy was shot, the number one song was a song called "I'm Leaving It Up to You" by Dallin Grace. I don't know if you know that song. 2 weeks later, "Louie Louie" was the number one song by the Kingsmen, and which is, you know, a completely liberating rock song. You got to ask yourself the question: how does a song like that? Because if you look at the charts in '63, there really wasn't a song comparable to "Louie Louie." By December of 63, 2 weeks after Kennedy had been shot, it was number one in the country, with a lot of sexual innuendos. It was a very liberating song in a lot of ways. By 64, the British invasion began, and the Beatles came over, and No, the Beatles don't seem, when you look at footage from them right now, they don't seem as radicals by any means, but they were very much the anti-hero. They had longish hair for that time. They were kind of absurd and funny and not, you know, they were cute. They weren't handsome. They were cute, you know. And so they kind of gave this irreverent, though you couldn't really pin them down on anything. They were irreverent yet cute at the same time. And with that, you had, I think, an upsurge in kind of this empowerment of youth somewhat. Like, they're young, they're playing music, and their music's really good. It's rocking. By August of 64, you had a song like The House of the Rising Sun by the Animals, which really, really could, I think, show some of where the United States was going at that point. Not only musically, but kind of from a lyrical standpoint. You know, that song was about a song about a house of prostitution in New Orleans. And, you know, this says something about kind of what's getting played on the radio and who's buying the records. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's important to look at the pop charts. They really say a lot about kind of where the culture is going. You also have Twist and Shout, you know, a real, again, kind of a liberation. It was almost like back in the 50s when Hound Dog and Don't Be Cruel and some of the other songs were coming out by Elvis, in this sense that, yes, we can dance again. You know, it was the early 60s was a lot about crooning and not that much about dancing. Let's see here, what else? Dancing in the Streets, another song that made it to the top of the charts. So that, you know, I would say the music was becoming, there was more harmony in the vocals, there was more rhythm being played out, and both of those things to me say that's more spirit in the music, that's more liberation in the music, and that's more about self-empowerment, you know, in the long haul, and it's by 65 you really saw that.
Did this trend, I mean, what happened to that trend by 68 and the assassination of Robert Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King the same year? Did that have a noticeable effect? Have you analyzed that on the Richter scale, of what earthquake effect that had on the music scene?
Well, we had 60s of the year, we kind of end the class, but we were talking about this earlier. By 70, what had happened, and it's remarkable when you look at the charts of 1970, the singer-songwriter and, you know, what you might want to call the 70s crooner was back. You had bands like Brad, you had people like, what else was it, Jim Croce.
Simon and Garfunkel, the Carpenters, the Partridge Family.
Oh yeah,
you know, those were all top 40 hits in the 1970s.
Uh-huh.
1970.
Yeah.
Heavy word songs,
yeah. And also, but more importantly, the music had slowed down. Okay, and that's a good question. You know, I think it's going to be a class in probably the fall. Why did the music slow down in 1970? It's really remarkable. It's almost like the change between 63 and 64, 69 and 70. What happened, you know, culturally, and you could say a lot of things. The Vietnamization
was heavy by then.
The anti-war movement had, you know, some people would say it had peaked by then. It's, you know, how long can a movement sustain? You know, how long can, you know, and so these factors I think have got to be, you know, addressed when you're looking at the charts of 1970.
I also think that the psychedelic phase, which really hit in 67, 68, had finally run its course by 69, 70. And I think that as far as the pop charts go, they had seen enough of that and people were ready to get back to something a little bit simpler, something they could understand. They had enough of that music that they didn't understand and the wild imagery, and they wanted something that they could really put their hands on.
Drugs had worn off, maybe.
Yeah. Right, they wanted philosophy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. They've been beyond that.
Also, another point is, it's interesting because 69 and 68, 69, 70 were very comparable to 58, 59, 60, and that the heroes started going again. Hendrix died, Janis Joplin died, Jim Morrison died. So you had these kind of wild, musicians who had really sang about, you know, in an extraordinary way. I mean, all three who I just mentioned were extraordinary in kind of their extroversion musically. And they had all gone again. So
the Beatles broke up, the Stones took a hiatus about that time.
Right. 70 was a very major year again. Dylan was, you know, Dylan came out in 1970 with New Morning, you know, which everybody couldn't believe. He came out with a country record, you know. So,
right. So even can you look at one individual, say like Dylan or somebody else in that range, and see the impact of history on their music? In other words, to me, it's like you got a musician walking along through that period, and all of a sudden there's this cannon roar in 63 that shocks them. Mm-hmm. And then there's this double cannon roar in 68, and I'm just wondering, it's like how those kind of shocks affect the musicians in general.
Yeah, well, personally, the musician I followed the most, and one of who I think fits that description, is John Lennon. Because as part of the British invasion, 63, 64, he's playing this loud thrashing rock and roll. And I just read a quote the other day from 63, or 64 rather, where Lennon's saying that Bob Dylan's telling me to look at the lyrics. He's playing these new songs. They listen to the lyrics, John. And John says, I don't listen to the lyrics. All he cares about is the beat.
Right.
So by 66, 67, Lennon was getting into more psychedelic drugs and doing I Am the Walrus and Strawberry Fields Forever. It was a very psychedelic period and kind of precursor to the Summer of Love here in San Francisco. And he experimented with that for a little while, but then if you listen to the later Beatle albums and the early John Lennon albums, which are coming out around 70, the Beatles late 69, once again he got back to the more simple singer-song style, the anti-war songs, and he sort of had come full circle. And then he was doing, like Dylan had told him to several years earlier, focused on the lyrics, and then the music was just a backdrop for what he really wanted to say.
So, if somebody wanted to find out more, talk about more of how did the John Kennedy assassination affect the music of people like John Lennon, how could they attend your classes?
Okay, well, they can call the Community Education Center at 282-7871, and we have three other classes. Can I mention the classes that
we're
offering?
Sure, please.
We're also offering a class on bebop called Bebop, the Evolution of Form, a class called Yoga and Improvisation, and also a class called Revolutionary Women Impacting Society. All classes are $80 for 8 weeks. And we're community-based. Teachers are all from the community, and we're really about kind of getting people interested in teaching, as well as taking classes from people who don't necessarily have PhDs but have a passion, interest in the subject.
So these classes on what, music history, music, are 8 weeks long? Each class is eight
Correct.
Weeks long. Oh, that's a long time. Hey, and for $80, that's a good deal.
Sure is.
Especially if, you know, if people are interested in the understanding their own period in history now, what's going on.
Actually, I'd like to comment. You were asking the question about is this the new Aquarian Age with Clinton? And I think, you know, in looking at history, it's really interesting because you had 8 years of Eisenhower before Kennedy, and, you know, Eisenhower in his 70s.
And the vice president was Nixon.
Richard Nixon. Right, which is another interesting point because he was a young vice president at that
right.
point, yet he didn't get elected. Anyways, but by 1992, you had 12 years of old, kind of the old reign, and here comes Bill Clinton. And Clinton played it up a lot in his campaign that he, you know, there was that image of him and Kennedy shaking hands and so forth. But I think the comparison is very relevant. I really do. I think that the mood of the country and how Clinton was elected and kind of the demographics that who voted for him really can relate to kind of what Kennedy went through in 1960. And, you know, I think this is an interesting time right now in this country for that reason.
Yeah, actually, I'm doing analysis on what I call the new type of assassination, character assassination, that they're doing against Clinton, that they intend to kill him this time not with bullets, but with words. and they are going to try and make it impossible for him to be reelected. The pressure is so hot on him. He's in the middle of a pressure cooker. But I've got a 5-cent bet on that he's going to be reelected.
Yeah, I hope so.
Right. Just because of the 80 million baby boomers in this country who are a tremendous economic force in this country, and they're going to, they've shifted the country around. I mean, we sort of owe Clinton being in the White House to Ross Perot running.
Yeah.
He threw the track off the train, the train off the track, but it's so. But I think we're into something. I don't know for sure. But it's interesting to see the way the musicians respond to these historical shifts, these earthquakes that happen in the political scene.
I've yet to really notice an impact on the music in the last 2 years since Clinton took office. I'll be watching for it, though. I think the major trends in hip-hop and rap have not really changed. I'm not sure that the people who are making that, which I would think is the dominant music form right now, I'm not sure that they see that much of a difference between Clinton and Bush. I'm not convinced yet, but time will tell.
And I'm interviewing Jim Kearns and Richard Myers. And this is the rock and roll stock market, or the music stock market. We judge our history by the music that our society produces. Somebody once said San Francisco is a town that was made by rock and roll. And to some degree, our history is made by rock and roll. In fact, English has become the dominant language in the world today, I think, because of rock and roll. And to some degree, it was rock and roll that brought down the Berlin Wall.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's completely right. I worked in Spain for a while, and I was amazed at what the kind of cultural domination that the United States had on Europe for the most part. But I was in Spain at the time, and a lot of the people didn't speak English, yet they could recite Bob Dylan lyrics. You know, or Leonard Cohen lyrics. You know, here nobody knows Leonard Cohen lyrics. You know, but you know, and I think it's real problematic. Actually, I think it's we pretty much, instead of going in with armies, we go in with our music, and our music isn't always admirable. So it's a cultural domination.
Yeah, I saw that in 1964. I participated in a mutiny when I was in the Navy. I resisted the invasion of Cuba, and I got a year of punishment duty in Iceland. And in Iceland, people don't speak English much, but they can sing the American rock and roll songs. So to me, it's not exactly cultural domination. What's going on is that it was the young people, the music of the young people, were able to create a language, a worldwide language. What was it they used to say was the language that would be the worldwide language? Esperanto. But instead, it wasn't Esperanto. It became rock and roll. And we now are, you know, one world, one love.
Yeah. We think people. It's easy to underestimate the power of music as an art form. Not to say it's any greater or less significant than other art forms, but you can't look at paintings while you're working, or you can't read literature while you're driving. But no matter what you're doing, you can always have music playing in the background. You go shopping, you hear music. You go to the mall, there's music playing. You get in a cab, there's music playing. It's just so there that sometimes you forget about it. So it's easy to overlook how significant an impact it can have on us.
Yes. Well, this has been an interview with Jim Kearns and Richard Myers.
Correct.
And with the Community Education Center. This is your host, Paul Kangas, on radio station KPOO. And again, what phone number should people call if they're interested in participating in the Passion of the Times, that is your classes?
Okay, it's at 282-7871. And we also encourage people who have a class they want to put together to give us a call. Either students or potential teachers. We take a lot of submissions and have them, they can give us a call, and we can go from there. But we really...
Are you both musicians?
I play folk guitar, but I'm not, I don't know if I consider myself a musician.
I hack in the harmonica just a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, you're a musicologist then.
Correct.
Yeah, songwriter. You know, I'd say that, but not really a not a good musician. No.
Because there's a lot of people in the audience for this program who are poets and songwriters, musicians who have produced many of the songs that are heard on this program, original works dealing with the Kennedy assassination. It's remarkable. This one songwriter, singer, told me that she listened to the program and went and wrote a song about it, and then something was missing. So she came back next week and listened to more of the program and added more to the song, and she basically wrote the song based on what she heard our investigation that we put out over the airwaves. And I was so impressed when she told me that. I couldn't believe it. Somebody had, you know, that was sort of the goal. Right, that was the goal of this program, to put ideas out in the public mind, and hopefully that musicians, poets, artists would come up with stuff. And indeed, some artists have come up with material. They've sent me a great caricature of Richard Nixon with a Watergate.